It's time for everyone's favorite podcast on the web. Pivot off the wall. Where you get the best sports talk and info in New York.
You lollygag the ball around the infield. You lollygag your way down to first. You lollygag in and out of the dugout. You know what that makes you, Larry?
Lollygag.
Lollygaggers. What's our record, Larry?
8-16.
How'd we ever win 8?
It's a miracle.
This is a simple game. You throw the ball, you hit the ball, you catch the ball. You got it!
It's an all-new Off the Wall on YesNetwork.com. And here's your host, Chris Sheeran.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the Off the Wall podcast here on YesNetwork.com. And obviously, you are listening to the Off the Wall podcast brought to you by DirecTV. Don't just watch TV. DirecTV, call 1-800-DIRECTV. It's the usual cast of characters starring Joe Auriemma as himself, Chris Sheeran as himself, and the special guest star, as they used to have back in the 80s, if this was an episode of Chips. Under the special guest star, you would see John Flaherty. John, welcome.
Thank you, guys. Great to be here.
That's it? No laughter
it.
Or anything?
I can't compete with Joe Auriemma and Chris Sheeran. I'm just the understudy.
Well, we really appreciate you coming on, and it's for obvious reasons. Andy Pettitte calls it quits. Just your initial reaction, Flash, to Andy deciding to hang them up.
Well, guys, initially, my first reaction was, excited for him and his family. You know, we all know that Andy's been wrestling with this decision for a few years now. Everybody knows what type of a family man he is. And, as an ex-player who kind of went through it and went out on his own terms, just like Andy did today, it's an exciting time in your life. You get to spend a lot of time with the people who are most important. You also have some opportunities that are presented your way that, you kind of don't know where you're going to go professionally, but you know there's going to be some different roads to follow. So that was my initial reaction, was very, happy for him. He was able to call it quits on his own and, excited for his family.
What about, Flash, the notion, because he did say at the press conference today, he is definitely not pitching this season, but he did kind of leave the door slightly open, and especially in the New York market, and he even copped to it in an interview with Mike Francesa. He said, all the beat writers were asking me these questions any which way they could about, all right, well, you said you didn't want to pitch this year, but is there a possibility, because he said maybe 2 months, 3 months down the road, he might get the itch again. Do you think that Andy, if he does get the itch again after he goes through all this, will come back at some point?
I would be shocked. Knowing Andy personally, playing with him and being around him, obviously, with the Yankees, I figured when he came to this decision that he would not leave any doors open. I was surprised to hear him say that he would not pitch this year, but he's not ruling out next year. Like I said before, I think one of the greatest things as an ex-player is if you can get to that point where you just don't want to do it anymore. And Andy mentioned that he just didn't have the drive to work for a long season, to get through a season. It's a grind. I mean, it's a grind mentally. It's a grind physically. And I was shocked that he left the door open. I'm sure it just leads to a lot more speculation with Yankee fans about, maybe if they hit a rough patch during the middle of the year with their rotation, would he entertain the ideas of coming back? I just never thought he would do that. But obviously, he left the door open.
Well, it's definitely pointing in that direction. And the speculation won't go away, especially if somebody gets hurt in the Yankees' rotation. And the thing that really hit me was that he looked directly into the camera and said, I'm ready for spring training. I know my body will be ready by the time the season starts, and my arm will be at full strength. And that had to drive Yankee fans nuts. But he followed that up, Flash, and you brought it up in your statement just before, and you said what he just said, and that was his heart wasn't into it. And you've been to that part in your career. when you say your heart isn't into it, there's really no way if you say that that you're going to come back, barring any Brett Favre-related comebacks here. You think when you reach that point, when you say, listen, my heart is no longer involved in this, he's done, right?
Yeah, I really think he is, Chris. You know, I was lucky enough to get to that point as a player where I just didn't want to do it anymore, and it was, you know, a second day spring training with the Red Sox where I had a terrible round of batting practice, and instead of going to work at it, which I would have done my whole career, you know, I went back to the apartment that I was renting, and that's when I knew that, you know, something was different. And you kept hearing that from Andy today. Something was different. I don't have the drive. And you know what? I'm sure there are players who felt that way, and they continue to play, whether it's for the paycheck or whether it's for chasing a ring. You know, Andy doesn't need those things. You know, he has the rings. He has plenty of money. He's not about the money. And, you know, I remember personally feeling that, you know, your teammates would be able to recognize if you weren't 100% committed. And, you know, that's what Andy Pettit is all about. If he's not 100% into it, he's not going to do it. I would be shocked if he ever made a return.
Well, in my eyes, Flash, he's got nothing left to prove. 16 years, 240 wins, a career ERA of 3.88, 221 win seasons, 5 rings, which you've mentioned. And the biggest thing of all, in my eyes, is the Major League Baseball best 19 postseason victories. And now the question gets bandied about, and debate has already started. And with most quote-unquote experts, it's really not a debate. They say he's not a Hall of Famer. But I did a little digging today, and I looked at a couple of his peers. Mike Mussina, who's thrown around every once in a while about making the Hall of Fame, and Tom Glavine. Now, Glavine, in my eyes, is an automatic. He gets in. I'm not saying he's not a Hall of Famer. Messina's on the cusp. Maybe, maybe not. Mussina has 270 wins. Pettit has 240. Mussina played 2 more years than Andy did. He's 7-8 in his postseason with a 3.42 ERA and no rings. And here's my argument. Now, if I was a lawyer arguing for Andy Pettit becoming a Hall of Famer, this is what because I get into arguments all the time. I've been a Yankee fan my entire life. Don Mattingly is very near and dear to my heart. I wear my heart on my sleeve, and the argument I get into with everybody about Mattingly is Kirby Puckett, and they have very similar numbers. Kirby's in, Donnie isn't. And everybody says Puckett has 2 world championships. All right, well, if world championships come into play and Andy Pettit has 5 rings, Flash, why can't he be at least considered to be a Hall of Famer?
Well, I think he's definitely going to be considered, and you're a lot more of an expert on this. Is, you know, you just rattled off all the stats and all that stuff.
But, well, you know, to be fair, I had it in front of me, and I did some research this morning. I don't want to say that.
I'm giving you credit for going right off the top of your head like Michael Kay does in the booth. It's impressive. Obviously, I can't do that. I would have been able to do it an hour and a half.
I didn't go to GW or Fordham, so.
I was delayed in this podcast. But anyway, let's get back to the point. I just, when I faced Andy Pettit as an opposing player and when I caught him with the Yankees, I did not think of him as, you know, the dominant pitcher of that time. And, you know, I guess that's as an ex-player who, and admittedly, I'm not good with statistics. I'm not good on Hall of Fame, who stacks up, who does not. I just base it on what was my feeling about either facing a guy as a pitcher or trying to get him out as a hitter. And for all that Andy has done, he's had an outstanding career and even more impressive in the postseason. I just don't view him as a Hall of Famer. And, you know, I hope I'm wrong because, you know, if there's anybody who deserves to get in there with the combination of performance, postseason performance, and character within a clubhouse, Andy Pettit would be the most deserving.
Wow, that is an interesting perspective from a former player's point of view. And since you brought it up, Flash, who were some of the dominating pitchers that you faced in your career? Who should be in there?
Yeah, obviously, Clemens would be at the top of the list. You know, you felt like when you faced a guy like that and he was on top of his game, you had no chance. I mean, that's feeling when you walk up to the plate saying I have no chance. That's obviously demoralizing. Randy Johnson fits into that category. Mariano Rivera fits in there, you know, and then you talk offensively, guys who, you know, you had a tough time getting out. Derek Jeter, obviously in a big spot. You know, Alex Rodriguez. You know, these are no-brainers that you talk about. And I guess back to my point, that's what I feel a Hall of Famer is a no-brainer. Right when you bring up his name and you remember trying to compete against him, that he was clearly on a different level. And I thought Andy said it perfectly today when he was talking about himself. You know, the game is hard, and the game was hard for Andy to perform at that high of a level. And the pure Hall of Famers are the guy who really, really make it look easy.
Hey, Flash, how are you? It's Joe Auriemma.
Joe, it's great to talk to you.
Oh, it's always a pleasure talking to you. You're a funny guy, Flash. So I just want to throw this out at you. In your career against Andy Pettitte, you went 5-for-22. That's a .227 batting average. What did he do when you went up to the plate that you said, wow, this guy does have good stuff? What kind of baffled you when you faced Andy Pettitte?
Well, Joe, you know, obviously when I faced him, he was a little bit different than he was at the end of his career.
Right.
And it was actually fun to hear Andy talk today in the press conference about how he almost felt like he's a better pitcher at the end than he was at the beginning, because he can use the whole plate, change speeds a little bit more. When I faced him, it was fastball, cutter, and as a right-handed hitter, when I faced Andy as a left-handed pitcher, I knew that he was going to come inside.
Mm-hmm.
He was going to challenge me inside, and that played right to my strengths. I mean, I loved guys who threw fastballs and came into the inner half.
Right.
And that being said, I got some hits off Andy, but I always felt like if there was a big spot, you know, first and second,
yeah,
he was one cutter away from getting a double play. And obviously, the way I blazed the base paths, I was the perfect guy to hit into some double plays. So, you know, it was frustrating as a hitter when, you know, you almost felt like if there was nobody on base, you're probably going to get a pretty good pitch to hit, and maybe you'll get yourself a base hit. But if he was in a jam, he was going to bear down and be able to make a big pitch and probably get a double play or a strikeout.
You know, one thing you got to say about Andy Pettitte is that, you know, the reaction of the fans today has been really overwhelming. You look at what he meant to this city and what he meant to the organization and the fans of the New York Yankees, you know, globally. Really, he's had such an impact on a whole generation of Yankee fans that, you know, didn't get to see Ron Guidry or Whitey Ford or Red Ruffing, or, you know, I can go on and on with the names, but really he is this generation's starting pitcher that everybody's going to remember. What does that say about Andy Pettitte, and what does that say about the New York fans when they do embrace somebody like Andy Pettitte?
Well, you know, everything you're talking about is, you know, I think you're alluding to what he's done on the mound and what a great Yankee he has been performance-wise. But, you know, I think, you know, being a native New Yorker, I think that New York fans realize when somebody is real. And, you
yes.
know, Andy Pettitte, when he had a good game or a bad game, and you listen to his comments afterwards, he's a real person. There's no BS there. He's going to tell you how he felt. He's going to admit when he had a tough outing. He's going to be very humble when he had a dominant outing. And I think the New York fans just really embraced this guy because they felt how real he was. There was a connection with the fans. You know, there was a connection as a teammate. You know, this guy, he would embrace anybody who came into that clubhouse as a new member of the Yankee organization. I remember my first spring training, that first day when you have physicals, and Andy Pettitte was the one guy who came over and, hey, it's great to have you here. You know, looking forward to working with you. That type of relationship that, you know, the fans felt it, I think, because he connected, but also teammates, ex-teammates felt it because he's just a real person.
That's a great point. And, Flash, you're a real person, and that's why the New York fans have embraced you.
Wow.
Well, I'm being serious.
That's awfully nice of you,
That
Jill.
Wasn't a shot. That was me saying the New York fans love John Flaherty.
Why do you laugh? Why is there a little giggle after
Chris is,
that?
Chris is laughing because he thinks I took a shot, too. I'm not taking a shot. John Flaherty's the man.
I sense the sincerity in your voice, and I appreciate it.
Okay, well, Chris Sheeran is way off base. You're way off base, and I'm just going to go on to my next
He's
question.
He's in quicksand, Flash.
That would be great.
Flash, now I just want to talk one more about one more thing with Andy Pettitte here. you know, everybody's going to look back on his career, and I'm sure he's going to get, you know, his number retired out in Monument Park and, you know, the whole shebang with the Yankee family. With that being said, the Yankees this year have lost a great pitcher. They've lost a front-to-middle rotation guy. Now, how is that going to affect the 2011 Yankees?
Well, obviously, your point well taken. You know, a top of the rotation to a middle of the rotation guy. You know, you would expect Andy to go out there if he stayed healthy. And, you know, 15 games, you don't say, you never say that anything is a lock in sports, but you would feel good about that. But I think this loss goes even further because, you know, both you guys know, and you've seen Andy do his work in between starts. And this guy is methodical. You know, he, from that last pitch of his last start, he's looking forward to his next opponent. He's preparing physically. He's also going through reports. He's figuring out how he's going to dominate a lineup. I think the Yankee pitching staff is going to miss that. You know, because I think the young guys, they followed Andy's lead, first of all, with the workouts that he did in between starts. But I think they followed his professionalism. And, you know, somebody's got to step up. And, you know, obviously CC does his thing on the mound. You know, big winner for the Yankees. But, you know, I think it goes even further behind the scenes, you know, that work ethic as a staff to kind of take everybody to the next level. We'll see who that guy is going to be this year.
That's a tremendous point, Flash. Not only do they lose his effectiveness on the mound, they also lose his effectiveness in the clubhouse and with the youngsters as well. So you got to look at it from that perspective. We're going to see how things start to shake out with the clubhouse in spring training, and that's fast approaching. Pitchers and catchers report on Valentine's Day, a day of love for Major League Baseball fans. I'm so stupid. Anyway, Flash, we want to know what you'll be doing for the Yes Network as far as spring training goes. I know we have some spring training special shows that will be coming down the line, but give us a rundown of what you'll be doing so the fans will know where to find you this spring.
Well, you know, at the best part of this time of year is when you get your schedule from Yes, and you know, I'm going to be back and forth to Tampa probably about three times. I think I'm doing maybe seven or eight games. Lucky enough to do some with Michael Kay, Kenny Singleton, and also Bob Lorenz, the great Bobby Lorenz, who did a great job with the.
Wow, really?
Had a press conference today. I thought he was outstanding.
He was. Bob always.
So
is.
You know, I'll be doing a bunch of games down there, like you said, taping a season preview special. But I think more importantly, just getting down there with some of the YesNetwork.com guys, yourself and Joe. And
Joe, you know, was just whispering to me.
Maybe a nice meal or a cocktail. That's what I'm looking for.
Joe was just whispering to me, make sure he does some interviews with us too. So, yeah, we're trying to line you up now. We will be there. Well, I'll be there from the 1st to the 8th of March. Hopefully you'll be down there as well. Joe is down there from the 1st to the 13th. I might be down there some more as well. It's still yet to be determined, but I cannot wait to spend some quality time in the Tampa with some Flash.
I look forward to it, guys.
Some drinks by the pool. Hello?
Sounds good.
All right, buddy. Thanks a lot. We really appreciate it. You're listening to the Off the Wall podcast brought to you by DirecTV. Chris Sheeran, Joe Auriemma, and our special guest, John Flaherty. We're back with more right after this.
Want to see what everyone's talking about? Check out the two-time Emmy Award-winning video content at YesNetwork.com. It's the best in Yankees web shows, podcasts, and features. Only at YesNetwork.com.
It's Off the Wall on YesNetwork.com. Here's more from Chris Sheeran.
Okay, hit in the air, not deep to left. Carter, moving in, makes the catch. No runs, no hits. There was one left on. Well, we'll come back and we'll talk with Susan some more. It's the Yankees 3, the Mariners 1. On the New York Baseball Radio Network, driven by Jeep. Isn't that amazing?
Who can be a pitcher?
And sprinkle in some off-speed. He had a cutter and he had some off-speed. The Andy Man can. The Yankees Andy Man can. No! The Andy Man can, cause he mixes in his fastball, makes the batters look bad. No! Have a great afternoon.
Not John Sterling. Mike from Mayapack. Thank you very much, Mike, for leaving me that message and giving us a little I don't know, feel of the Yankee season starting to come back. Oh, God, it's always funny. He's usually, he calls into Mike Francesa's show. Somehow he got into my office. I want to thank the Yes operator for that. And away we went, and he left me that message. It was great. Anyway, let's first of all thank John Flaherty for taking some time out of his day to join us here on the Off the Wall podcast, which is once again brought to you by DirecTV. Don't just watch TV, DirecTV. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Joe Auriemma, Chris Sheeran back with you. Just to put a little nice bow tie, I mean, we could talk about Andy Pettit for the rest of the podcast, but you know we're not going to do that. We have other things to get to with the Super Bowl and our predictions for that game. But as far as what we heard from Flash and as far as Andy Pettit goes, I just want to delve into that Hall of Fame discussion. I don't want to get in too much of it with Flash because, you know, we're pressed for time. But I compared him to Mike Messina. I compared him to Tom Glavin. Now, listen, don't jump on my back because I bring Tom Glavin into this. There's a reason why, and Joe knows my madness. I brought in Messina because he's kind of borderline. And Glavin he's a Hall of Famer. He's an ultimate Hall of Famer. There's no questioning Tom Glavin getting in. There's no questioning Maddox. There's no questioning Smoltz. All three of those guys will eventually be in Cooperstown. Glavin, 22 seasons. He has 305 wins. He's got the magic number, 305. He's got one ring. He's got 520-win seasons, three in a row, by the way. But here's something interesting, and I just want to bring it up. And again, Glavin in my eyes is a Hall of Famer. I'm not poo-pooing Tom Glavin at all. I'm just bringing up what I think is a valid point that you could throw into a lawyer's discussion with the jury when talking about Andy Pettit. And yes, you have to bring up the HGH2 at some point. And you know what? God bless Andy Pettit for being the only one to cop to it. A-Rod did too. You got to give him some credit as well. But at least they came out, they admitted what they did. All right, here's the interesting fact that I came up with, and thank you, baseballreference.com. Glavin, his last 6 years, five with the Mets and his last with the Braves, which he should have just packed it in anyway, but he was 63-60. Now, I know that could have been a lot better with the Mets teams he was on those last 5 years, but he was 63-60. I realize he could have about 10 more wins, maybe. Pettit, his last 6 years, was 85-56. He was 29 games over 500. 2 years with the Astros, 4 years with the Yankees. 2009, I don't have to remind you, ALDS, clincher. ALCS, clincher. World Series, clincher. Andy Pettit in the postseason. Bears repeating, major league record, 19 postseason wins, 3.83 ERA in the postseason. And he has five rings. It's a pretty – now, I just bring this up because I know he might not be a Hall of Famer, but I don't want to totally poo-poo it like everybody seems to be just jumping the gun and poo-pooing it. They're saying, nah, no way, he's not a Hall of Famer. He could be a really good Yankee. The Yankees could retire his number, but he's not a Hall of Famer. Go back to my Kirby Donnie thing. If rings come into play, Pettit's got one for every finger. And he was a major contributor. Could have had another one, if not for Game 6 in Arizona. But nobody's perfect. And are you going to tell me if Pettit wins that game that he is a Hall of Famer? That's negligible to me. I mean, but if you're going to tell me if he has six rings and he's 20-10 in the postseason, that was the difference. Your argument for him not being in Cooperstown just really went to the bathroom. And I'm sorry for all the poo-poo references. Must be Snooki.
Well, you know, Chris, and we discussed this before. My take on it is, because he is an admitted HGH user, that the writers are going to certainly weigh that in their... you know, when they vote to see if he gets in the Hall of Fame. But I actually think that now that he's retired at this point, and there have been a lot of other guys that haven't admitted it, or there's suspicion around them, or it's come out that they have used it, or have admitted it, now that they're coming through, it's going to be interesting to see in 6 years when he is up for his first, 5-6 years when he's up for his first election here, if a Roger Clemens gets in the Hall of Fame. That's going to be interesting to see, because if Roger gets in the Hall of Fame, I think that certainly helps his case, because then they're going to say, well, they let Roger in on the merit of his pitching, so now they're going to let Andy, you're going to think they're going to give Pettit more consideration. But if they're going to be hard on Clemens, and they're going to be hard on a lot of these players and continue to have the stance that they've had, where, you know, McGuire's lost a lot of votes, and you know, Palmeiro did absolutely nothing in the vote, well, you know, then it's going to be hard for Pettit. Because, you know what, at the end of the day, as good of a guy as he is and everything else, the writers, they're going to look at it and say, yeah, he was an admitted HGH user, and we're not going to put him in the Hall of Fame based on that. But, I mean, you just looking at numbers, you know, you look at this, you know, on Baseball Reference, guys that are similar pitchers to Andy Pettit, the top 10 guys, you know, 5 of them are Hall of Famers. So, I mean, that's saying something. That's saying something. And Mike Mussina, they compare, you know, they said he's very similar, and he's a borderline Hall of Famer. So, you know, it's when it comes down to it, it's going to be an interesting argument. But, you know, he is, one thing that he is, he's 102 games over 500. And that's something that they can't ever take away from him, because that's a stat. You might not get a lot of 300 win guys in this day and age, but 100 games over 500 is a huge stat.
One, I want to get your comment on this, because Flash told me when we were interviewing him, and I just wanted to get your thoughts. But one of the most telling things he said in that interview we just did was, from a former player standpoint, he didn't see Andy as a dominant pitcher of his time. And that kind of hit me as, all right, well, if somebody was arguing against me, I would have to take that into consideration. Okay, maybe coming from a player that actually faced him and caught him, if he wasn't dominant, because it's the Hall of Fame. It's not the Hall of Really Good, right? I mean, that's what I'm trying to say. I know the numbers are there. Numbers are numbers. But when you talk about dominance, you talk about a Whitey Ford. You talk about a Sandy Koufax. So give me your thoughts on that.
Well, you know, Chris, you just kind of said it yourself there. It's not the Hall of Really Good. And that's why I have always said, in my opinion, I think there should be some years where some guys don't get in. I don't think you should just vote a guy in for the sake of voting for a guy. The writers can vote for 10 players. Now, it is their Hall of Fame. It's the writers' Hall of Fame. So they can put in whoever they want. But to me, there's a lot of dominant players that are in the Hall of Fame, and there's a lot of players that weren't dominant that are in the Hall of Fame. I'm not the biggest fan of Pee Wee Reese being in the Hall of Fame. I'm not the biggest fan of Bill Mazeroski being in the Hall of Fame. I'm not a big fan of Phil Rizzuto being in the Hall of Fame. I'm not a big fan of Burt Blyleven making it this year. I'm sorry, but 285 or 287 and 250, whatever he was, to me, you know, I know there was a lot of people, you know, saying, oh, it's great, we got this guy in. But, you know, why wasn't he a Hall of Famer 13 years ago or 14 years ago? All of a sudden, now he's a Hall of Famer. Why wasn't Jim Rice a Hall of Famer in year one, but he's a Hall of Famer in year 15? Okay? Why is Andre Dawson all of a sudden a Hall of Famer? If you're a Hall of Famer and you're a dominant player, you're getting in on the first four tries. Roberto Alomar deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. Okay, that's the bottom line. But you're making it on the last absolute last possible ballot. I'm sorry. You're not a Hall of Famer. That's just my opinion. It's just my opinion, though.
Wow, Joe must have taken what I took last week. A lot of venom. But all kidding aside, you're absolutely right. And as I brought it up, listen, I'm not saying Andy Pettit is or isn't a Hall of Famer. All I'm saying is there are facts in front of you. There are memories you have in your brain that you can argue that the man has a shot to be in the Hall of Fame.
And that one, that's why I'm saying your argument is valid. I'm not arguing the point that I am arguing the point that I think the Hall of Fame is a little watered down. But there's no watered down Hall of Fame like the Football Hall of Fame, by the way. Just throwing that out. Okay. But secondly, if all of these other guys are making the Hall of Fame, if a Burt Blyleven is making the Hall of Fame, which I'm sure I'm going to get killed by whoever saying that I don't think Burt Blyleven's a Hall of Famer. I don't think he's a Hall of Famer. But if he is in the Hall of Fame, and he is in fact a Hall of Famer now, then why can't Mike Messina be a Hall of Famer? Why can't Andy Pettit be a Hall of Famer? You know, they had some very dominant years. And for a 10 to 13 year period, in Andy's case, all 16 years, he was a better than average pitcher. Better, way better than average pitcher. He was almost dominant at certain points in his career. And there were times where Burt Blyleven wasn't dominant at all. So I'm saying that, yeah, if there are certain guys that are in the Hall of Fame, you know, look at Andy Pettit. Andy Pettit didn't have one year in his career where he was under 500. Not one. Not one. You can make that argument, Chris. You're absolutely valid.
That's all I wanted to bring to light. I'm not sitting here making a brash statement that Andy Pettit is a baseball Hall of Famer. All I'm saying is that if I were Doug Llewellyn and I was arguing this case in front of Judge Wapner, I would just want people to know that there is an argument. We have to put that in over this entire segment. But anyway, that's what you have to look at.
6 o'clock, Wapner.
Oh boy, now the Rain Man starts to come in. But you have to look at the numbers. But the thing you have with Andy Pettit, besides the numbers, is that you have not only the rings, but you can actually remember when he pitched these big games. I never saw Whitey Ford pitch. I mean, the only thing I know about Whitey Ford is what I've read. I know I have viable information. These writers that have covered Pettit for 16 years have viable information, fact. And the one thing Pettit, I think, has going for him, besides all the tremendous numbers, is that how good he was with his dealings with the media, even through the HGH. That's not going to hurt him. That's going to help him. And like Joe said, there are guys in the Hall of Fame right now that are borderline guys that maybe shouldn't be in, like a Phil Rizzuto who got elected by the Veterans Committee. Do we love Scooter? Absolutely. But was he a Hall of Famer? It is, you know, Burt Blyleven, I can count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 of his first 12 years. His ERA was under 3 in the American League. It's pretty good. Pretty good. But I could also see he was 4-5, 9-11, 8-13, 7-10, 9-11, 10-17. Andy Pettit never had those years. I understand it was a different time, and he was a different pitcher. He pitched a lot more. Don't talk to me about innings. Because I'm telling you right now, if it was up to Andy Pettit, he would have pitched a complete game every game. It wasn't up to Andy Pettit. They take care of these guys more than they did back then. That's why I tried to compare Andy to a couple of his peers in Glavin, who's, as I said, an automatic Hall of Famer, and Messina, who some people argue should be in and some people argue shouldn't be in. It's going to be interesting. I just don't want it out there. People just say, nope, not a Hall of Famer. He's just a good Yankee. Which might end up being the case. I'll deal with that. I've been dealing with Don Mattingly not being in the Hall of Fame my entire life. I don't think it really bothers Donnie. New manager of the Dodgers. Things starting to turn around with the McCourts out there. Thank goodness for him. He does have the Giants to contend with, though. That is a scary rotation if it stays together for a while. I don't want to hear anything about the Phillies. Everybody on Twitter anointing them World Series champions because of their rotation. That, by the way, the Giants beat. Not only in the NLCS, but in the World Series. Oh, baby. They did. Halladay Oswalt, see you later. Cliff Lee, who? Twice, not once, twice, when it mattered the most. Pitching wins championships. Are the Yankees in a little bit of trouble this year? Who knows? You know why? They haven't gotten on the field yet. Can they step on the diamond before we start putting out report cards? Can they step on the diamond before we start burying them as a non-playoff contender this year? Can they step on the diamond? Can we get to spring training before we just start writing the New York Yankees off this season? You know, all these report cards that are coming out, Joe made a great point, and I'm not going to steal it from him. I'm going to let him tell you what he said. All these report cards coming out are moot, void, if
John Lester steps on the mound in game one and tears his shoulder up and is out for the year. And then you know what? You can take your report, you can take that report card and you can shove it up something. I'm not going to say it here because it's a family podcast. However, I'm going to say this. Anything can happen. That's what happens in baseball. They lost Andy Pettit for a period of time last year, and it affected the team. You know, guys get hurt. Guys get injured. It's a long season. And by the looks of it, I'm looking at the rest of the American League. Are you that impressed? Are you that impressed? Did the Texas Rangers get better? I don't think so. They lost Cliff Lee. The Oakland Athletics have no offense. Okay? The Angels stink. Stink. I don't care what anybody says. They stink. The Mariners? Yeah, I'm sorry. Get some offense, okay? Score more than one run a game.
What about the Central?
Oh, my God. What an awful division. Awful division. The Central stinks. The Yankees competition is going to be in the AL East. The Blue Jays are decent. The Orioles are decent. The Rays are decent, even though they lost everybody and got a million first-round draft picks. They're still decent. But looking at the American League, this is a league that the Yankees could still get in. Even with a rotation that, you know, Brian Cashman admittedly said is not his best rotation that he's ever put together. But at the end of the day, anything can happen. So put away your report cards. Put away your statistics. Put away everything. Because when they get on the diamond and they get out on the field, that's when you can start putting report cards out. And even then, anything can happen. September 28th, last game of the year, the Phillies could lose Cliff Lee to a freak injury, and that's the end of their season. Well, not really, because they have...
Well, that would be the virtual end of their season.
But you know what I mean. But I'm just saying, it wouldn't make them as strong as they are in the postseason. I just don't understand it. I sometimes think the people don't understand the game of baseball because maybe you've never picked up a baseball in your life. Maybe that's it.
Well, it's a 162-game season. And that's what I try to beat into the heads of the people on Twitter. You know, in April, you can't go nuts. If you have an under 500 April, is it bad? Is that the way you wanted to start? No. But you've got May, June, July, August, September. 5 months of the season remain. You have to at least play a quarter of the season before you could start making any valid quote-unquote report card on a team. Now, do the Yankees have some issues with their rotation? Of course they do. CC Sabathia is at the top. He's not a question mark. AJ Burnett is like the Riddler. There's question marks all over his body. But you're hoping with Larry Rothschild, he comes in and waves a magic wand, and AJ Burnett is dominant again. I mean, you take a guy, he throws 95, 96 miles an hour. He's like a year removed from being a dominant pitcher enough to help the Yankees win a World Series. So let's just say hypothetically, instead of everybody thinking that AJ is not going to do well this year, let's say he does do well. Let's say he has 15, 16 wins. CeCe has a normal CeCe year, has 18 to 20 wins. Phil Hughes will give him 14 wins. That's not a potential playoff team? Yeah, but Chris, who's going to be the 4 and 5? All right. Let's answer that question. Thank you, caller. You bring in guys like Mark Pryor, who's going to probably, if he makes the team, used in the bullpen to help the bullpen out, like Kerry Wood did last year. I don't know what capacity, but we'll see what he has. He might not have anything. He might not make the team. Same thing goes for Bartolo Colon. Who knows? Freddy Garcia. But if one of these guys makes the team, what, between Garcia and Colon, because Cash has already said Pryor will be in the bullpen. But if Colon or Garcia make this team, that is a viable veteran influence that has done it before. Colon didn't do it last year, but Garcia did. He had 12 wins. I'm not saying he's going to put the same exact numbers up, but if he puts 12 wins up as your fourth starter, you wouldn't sign for that? And then you have Ivan Nova. Started to groom him last year a little bit. This is exciting. Okay, everybody's down because Andy left. It's depressing. It's the end of an era. It's the beginning of the end of the core four. Posada's not too far away. Moe's not too far away. And neither is Jeet. It's very sad. Those of you who followed this team, those of you who were born, luckily, in 1990 and have experienced nothing but success with the Yankees, this is a very sad day for you. You're 20, 21 years old. You grew up with this team. You grew up with Andy Pettit. I can understand how tough it is. I do. But you have to understand, coming from someone like me and Joe's perspective, having been through the 80s and the train wreck that this team was, it's exciting to know that this team is not going to be a train wreck. Probably ever again. And you have kids coming up. These kids coming up, just to mention a few names, Hector Nowicki, Andrew Brackman, Manny Banuelos, Dellin Betances. Are they going to be in the major leagues this year? Probably not. But you keep grooming them, though. Brackman's what, 24? Banuelos is 20. Betances, I think, is 22. Nowicki's 22 or 23.
Brackman's actually, he's 25, going to be turning 26, so he actually might get a good look this year to be on the big club. I mean, I think he's going to be in the mix with Nova and those guys. I really do. I do. I think he's going to be in the mix with Nova and Freddy Garcia, and I think they're going to give him a legitimate shot here.
Joey, from your mouth to God's ears, hopefully these kids start getting looks. That's what it's all about with me. I just want to see these kids progress in the Yankee system. We will see. We don't know what the future holds, but we know what it might hold, so hopefully these kids get a chance. We'll be right back on the Off the Wall podcast to get our Super Bowl predictions in right after this.
Go to YesNetwork.com for the best Yankee coverage on the web. Insightful blogs, original content, and great video make YesNetwork.com your one-stop source this season.
It's Off the Wall on YesNetwork.com. Here's more from Chris Sheeran.
I didn't think we were going to go that long on the Yankees, but, you know, I think it warranted it, Joe, and we needed to get all that stuff in. So, once again, we'd like to thank John Flaherty. It was great talking about Andy Pettit and the Yankees this year. A lot of stuff we got off of our chest on that. Now, really quickly, to wrap up this podcast and put a nice bow tie on the whole thing. We put a nice bow tie on Andy. Now we'll put one on the entire podcast. Is our Super Bowl thoughts and predictions. Now, my heart is Packers. I want to see Aaron Rodgers win the game. I want to see him win the Super Bowl. Ben's been there. He's won two. And quite frankly, he's not one of my favorite people right now for his transgressions off the field. And I know he's bettering himself and he's trying to better himself. And I know he talked to Terry Bradshaw this past week and they cleared the air about everything. He's just, I don't know. If karma does exist, Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers will win the Super Bowl. If not, it just goes back to what I said about Carl Pavano facing the Yankees. If Pavano were to beat the Yankees in the postseason, anybody who says karma is going to get you, you could just look at them and say, I don't think so, because karma does not exist. Now, the Yankees beat Pavano, not once, but twice. So karma was definitely in play. Now it goes one further with Aaron Rodgers against Ben Roethlisberger. You know, he has this Brett Favre monkey on his back. He's trying to get rid of all this stuff. Favre won a Super Bowl championship, had them on the precipice before the Giants sent them home. Now it's Rodgers' team. All the injuries they battled through this year to get to where they are. And you know, if the Giants beat the Eagles and the Philadelphia Eagles don't come back, the Packers are on the outside looking in. They're not even in the playoffs. So you owe New York a bit of gratitude, Aaron Rodgers, to go along with that shellacking in Green Bay that you handed us. But I have to say that I want the Packers to win. I think the Packers are going to win. And I think the final score is going to be 31-23, Green Bay.
That is a wild prediction. You know, I got to say, the one thing you got to love about this Packers team is that this is a team a couple of years ago was taking an absolute beating from everybody for the way they handled the Favre situation. And Ted Thompson should be commended for sticking to his guns and saying, we're going to lose Aaron Rodgers. We need Aaron Rodgers if we want to do anything in the future. And you know what? This is an organization that, you know, they can say we had Bart Starr, we had Brett Favre, and in the future they're going to say we had Aaron Rodgers. And right now, Aaron Rodgers is the best quarterback in the NFL. That's what he's playing like. And to me, I think the Packers are going to do enough defensively. I think their secondary is going to play a great game. And I actually think that the Steelers are not going to be able to handle the spread offense that the Packers are going to be, you know, showing at them, you know, with the four wide and the decent tight end. Can you imagine if they had, you know, if they didn't have a tight end problem at the beginning of the year where they lost every one of their tight ends? I mean, this is a team that's, yeah, they are potent on offense, and they're not going to run the ball. They're going to pass. And I just think, in the end, they're going to win this game 24-21 in a very tightly contested game. Enough to win this game, though. 24-21. Maybe because I have those two numbers in a box. I don't know. Just saying.
This is the first year I didn't get involved in a box, but whatever. That's fine. I usually win it, too, which is kind of depressing. But I have to just put a little stamp on the entire podcast by bringing it back full circle. You brought it up with Ted Thompson saying, we have to keep Aaron Rodgers. We're going to lose Aaron Rodgers. I had to make this decision now. Think about that for a second, Yankee fans. Packers took their lumps for 2 years. Look where they are now. And the Yankees are in a better position than the Packers were because of the lineup they have. Okay? Just think of that for a second. Is there a possibility that the Yankees might not make the playoffs this year? Sure. Of course there is. But in years to come, with all these arms down on the farm, it's an exciting time to be a Yankee fan. And I hope you're feeling the same thing too. Once again, for John Flaherty, Joe Auriemma, I am Chris Sheeran. You have been listening. I almost said watching. You have been listening to the Off the Wall podcast. brought to you by DirecTV. Don't just watch TV, DirecTV. Call 1-800-DIRECTV, and we will see you next week. Same bat time, same bat channel.